December 9, 2021, it's the Watch for Pedro show. Pedro Show, Happy Thursday. Started off with Why Was I Born? John Coltrane with Kenny Burrell. One of the few recordings with the guitar man, but, you know, I've been reading Peter DiStefano, Lewis Porter's book on John Coltrane, and there was a cat in Philly, Dennis Sandlo or something. He was a guitar man, and John Coltrane learned a lot of theory from him. And then we had Sean Pressinger is Prester John. It's kind of a reveal with that fucking project. you can tell. Well, let me tell you the tune name. Gray, Green, Yellow. And, because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype adventure, I am not man alone, Pete. I got Prester John is Sean Hersinger. Welcome aboard, Sean.
Oh, thanks for having me, Mike. Happy to be here.
And we got to give credit for the connect. Big thanks. And Mr. Feigenbaum of... Cuneiform, Requiem of a lot of, actually a lot of happening guitar players on that label.
But a lot of great guitar players and drummers.
Yeah, everybody. I was going to just say a lot of good musicians, but man, I mean, there is a lot of guitar, man. It's a lot of people, you're having fun exploring possibilities with music. I love that. And for him to make that happen, you know, facilitate it. I don't know if he plays himself or anything, but he's definitely in love with music.
Oh, he is. Yeah. Steve, I have one record of Steve's. He's on a compilation of a random Radar records that when he was a kid. But that's pretty much the only thing he ever released, as far as I know, and then he doesn't play since. I mean, that record is 40 years old.
Okay, so he played a little bit, but he's such a supporter of musical arts and stuff. And so I know he has a big place for it in his heart. And anyway, I'm curious about your journey with music. So please bring your earliest musical recollection.
Well, my earliest, there's three of them, basically. It was hearing Linda Ronstadt's version of When Will I Be Loved on the radio when I was a kid.
I remember that.
The Everly Brothers song, and I just thought, oh, this is what music is.
Well, she can make any song sound good, but that's a good one to work with.
Yeah, that one. Well, right, you get two birds with one stone there, right? Linda and the Everly Brothers, so it's hard to beat. But the other big one for me as a kid was...
You know, it reminds me, she had a record, right? Songs for my father, cantos, for her father.
Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful. Go ahead. Yeah. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Devil Woman by Cliff Richard was around the same time.
Cliff Richard, which his backup band, Shadows, which was incredible, right? Apache and...
Absolutely.
What was his, with the big glasses, right? Hank...
Hank Marvin.
That's it. I think he's still with us, right? Still playing.
Yeah.
Hank Marvin. Yeah, it's not all ventures, people.
But the big one for me as a kid was Kiss. I mean, I came of age when Kiss was big, and I heard that Kiss record, and I just thought, I always say, I didn't want to be a musician when I first heard Kiss. I just wanted to be Gene Simmons. That was the goal.
Oh, bass.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, I had no idea.
Same thing with me until D. Boone's mom put me up. I got to tell you my Kiss story. We saw them like maybe four or five times before they had an album out. They would open up for anybody. We saw them open for Wishbone Ash, for like Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, Savoy Brown, the five-man James Gang with Tommy Bolin, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I think that James Gang one is where Gene Simmons' hair caught fire and a roadie came on with a towel and knocked it off, knocked the flames off his head. Burning his head off. And last time we saw him, they did have the record. And it was the worst. It wasn't as good. But I remember when the album did come out, thought it was so slow because the gigs, they played everything twice as fast.
So much more energy in the live performance. Absolutely.
Yeah. And also they had all the good songs, right? They're not writing in the studio or bringing outside writers. They have all that stuff that they did gigs with, maybe going back to Wicked Lester shit.
Yeah, yeah. All those songs with all that sexual innuendo that you totally miss as a kid. That you go back an adult, you go every single song.
It's worth a deuce. Yeah, okay. Humana, humana. That's what they would open up as. And when we saw them when they had a record. Yeah, I think it was the Lunch Pail shit with like Destroyer or Bob Ezra. It was at the Forum, and Gene Simmons came on stage. His bass wasn't plugged in, so some roadie slid on his back and pushed it, you know, made it happen. So this next question, what was the first record you bought with your own money? It was probably Kiss record.
It probably was, because certainly my mom, my parents always super supportive of my musical taste, no matter how weird they ended up getting. But it probably wasn't Kiss. It was probably AC/DC, Let There Be Rock, or Powerage. You know, I'm going to just say it's Powerage, because that's my favorite AC/DC record, totally underrated album. And that's when I would have first started about getting an allowance. I was about 10 years old.
Yeah, you don't have a lot of money when you're a kid, so it's trippy. What are you going to spend it on? And what about the first gig you saw?
Well, you're going to love this. It was the first big gig. It was the Cap Center, Washington, D.C. Sammy Hagar, I Can't Drive 55 tour.
I saw him a couple times singing for Ronnie Montrose.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And I think one of the times, no bass, I think it was left hand of the keyboard.
Oh, wow.
This guy in a beret. And Ronnie Montrose, you know, he could play some lead guitar. And Rock the Nation and Bad Motor Scooters.
Oh, man, there's so many great songs.
Rock the Nation was like I Am Free by The Who. Don't tell me.
Yeah.
Okay, so... Yeah, Arena Rock. Okay. Because you didn't know about clubs. We didn't know about clubs either until the movement.
Yeah, I was 13 years old, so it took, you know, I lived in the boondocks in Virginia at the time, so that was a good hour and 15-minute drive. My dad drove me to the gig and stayed in the car while I went to the show with one of my friends. I was 13. I think I just turned 14.
That's like me and D. Boone, but D. Boone's pop sat with us. It was T-Rex, Long Beach Auditorium.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he's from Nebraska. He didn't know what the fuck this was, but he sat with us. I remember some Hare Krishnas were in front with sparklers in the gig, right? This 70s, right?
Well, and I wonder, you know, it's one of those things. What was cooler? Your dad goes in with you to the show, or your dad tells you at 14, nope, you can do it by yourself. That felt like, oh, dad has respect and dad trusts you. It was great.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So maybe D. Boone's pop didn't trust us. I don't think when I met D. Boone, the only rock band he knew was Creedence. So I don't think his pop was way into Buck Owens.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So my dad would have grown up on country music, too.
He's back, he ends up back in Bakersfield.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he moved to first in California, and then he ended up back there, and, you know, Buck had a club there and all that stuff, Buckaroos, and he just loved them. So it's trippy, all the paths that lead to now. What about school? Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
Nothing. I didn't do anything musically in school until I got a guitar, and then it was just friends teaching me. But no,
okay,
I didn't take band.
Let's talk about that then, Sean. How did you get turned on to the guitar?
So, again, between Gene Simmons and Angus Young, those were the two things where I thought, well, this is what I want to do. This is clearly what I want to do. And I spent the first year just pretending to play the guitar. I got the guitar, and that was enough. I didn't even have to learned any chords. Also, I got that Mel Bay chord book, and I looked at it, and I thought, this doesn't look like the chords that Angus plays.
Yeah, or the Paul Stanley rhythm guitar solo.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So, that's what Deuce had. A lot of their songs, Firehouse at the beginning, Paul Stanley would have rhythm guitar solos, and in fact, there was this period in the 80s where he was doing clinics at the Shithard Centers. I saw his first solo tour, too. It was hilarious. It was at the little club that Minutemen used to play called Bogart's in Long Beach, Marina Pacifica Mall. And, you know, 300 people packed. It was packed. And the limo, man, he must have had to run like 300 yards. He runs the whole way from the limo to the stage. And in his mouth, he had like 100 picks. Guitar picks, and he spit them out all over the peoples, of course, you know, showering them, and they loved it. And so, some dudes had their license plate they were holding over their head. Okay, this one's about Johnny in the streets. You know, it was hilarious. I think he had Ozzy's band backing him up. Trippy guy, though. Once I saw him in Manhattan at We Buy Guitars, well, he was in the store looking at guitars, and I'm on the sidewalk, and I knew that rose on his shoulder.
Yeah.
So I looked at him, I pointed, of course you can't hear me, right? But I mouthed it, right? Is that you? And he mouthed back at me, yeah, it's me. And I bought that Blue Thunderbird, the non-reverse I got. I just bought her back after not playing her for 18 years.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and I put a 51 P-Bass pickup instead of the original just because I've never had a single call. Okay, so you're doing like what I did with a baseball bat and some guys in Navy housing where, like, you turn on the record real loud and you just, like, mime it, right?
That's exactly what I was doing.
But at least you had the fucking guitar.
Yep.
Look, you gave me this Prester John, Dave Kerman, Silhouette Number One. Let's listen.
Thank you. Thank you. gonna be my lucky break. This was gonna be my lucky break. This was gonna be my lucky break.
Show that Chuck and you start off with Prester John, Dave Kerman, Silhouette Number One. Then Ava Mendoza, guitarist up in Brooklyn now. She's from Orange County. But she made a record, just came out with a solo guitar record, where other cats wrote her music. Like Trevor Dunn wrote her a piece, Devin Hoff, both bass men. But sometimes those bass men know how to, you know, the politics of bass, right? We look good making you guys look good. I love it. Hi-Fi Club with Duke Garwood and Jean-Michel, or Michelle, I butchered their language, so sorry. Pardon, my heart on. Bossini, Deep as the Sun, then Putin Club out of France, Palais Bourbon, or like, you know, it's brown, it's going down, right? Bourbon. Thomas Prendon from the D.C. area, encountering an extended delay. These guys have recorded like 6,000 songs and done like 6 gigs in 40 years, but they're still going. Ray Shin, Outside a Rider, I think out of Reno. Max Raddins, Taiwan. A Dutch dude who just moved to Taiwan. Vultures. I think this was his older... I think he's doing bass now, but this one he was on guitar. And Bob Buckle Jr., Sam Locke Ward out of Iowa with Lucky Break. And finally, Sean Persinger is Prester John. Blood Jokes. Okay, so you got the book. Okay, what was the guitar? I'm curious, what was your first guitar? Did you get to pick it, or is it just given to you?
Yeah, I got to pick it, but it was because I was a beginner. It wasn't anything great. It was an Epiphone, and I can't remember which model it is.
Was it electric or acoustic?
It was electric. It was solid body.
Okay, an amp?
And I had a little tiny 10-watt Marshall amp.
Of course. Yep. At least it was Marshall.
Yep, exactly.
It wasn't like, I don't know.
No, that was a good amp. That was a good amp.
I got a little, you know, all these little Pratt amps for bass with the 8-inch speakers.
Yeah,
I fart out on every Eastern note. I think I got a custom, but it don't have the tuck and roll. If it had the tuck and roll, I could. You know, I remember seeing Creedence concert and the curly chords. Excuse me, padded amps, so something about it, but maybe not the best sound. So, the Mel Bay book, but do you go look for a teacher?
Well, I had a good friend, this guy, John Cloud, and he knew all the heavy metal songs, so he taught me Dio, and he taught me, actually, a different friend taught me the Scorpions, but everything I was learning was just mooching off of friends.
Scorpions, so the one I like is, what's the one with Robot Man? That's the good one. I think it's the second one.
Okay. I'm sort of that. So right for me, I was on that cusp of that arena rock metal, and then 1984, 1985 comes along, and punk rock enters my life.
Oh,
and that
okay. So it's a
changed
little
everything.
Yeah. Well
right?
I think the UFO guys and Scorpion guys traded guitar. Got Michael Schenker and these guys.
Exactly.
Uli Roth and stuff. But I had a buddy who was way into this stuff, and so that's how I got a little educated to it. But I like that Robot Man. Check it out someday. And, yeah, you're right. That's kind of a change. That's when who are they called? Slayer. Right? Yeah, because the punk is kind of weird for a lot, especially more square suburb guys. Like, it's too...
Well, for me,
loud. But they like the fast music, right? They wanted the energy. But maybe not dress up like Halloween, you know, wear their own fucking costumes, but not that punk one.
Well, for me, it was that heavy metal seemed to be more of a costume and more, I mean, it was obviously more commercial. So when punk rock came along and sort of eschewed that whole idea, that was like, well, here's the fast music and here's that negative attitude. And also, I would say, this seems like these people read books too, right? I wasn't necessarily getting that. With all due respect to the heavy metal guys, I just never got that impression.
Not really.
Right. Or if they were reading books, they were reading fantasy, right? That sort of power metal type idea. But when I listened to the Dead Kennedys, I thought, oh, this guy.
Shelley Biafra, right?
There's an education here.
And that guitar man was interesting. Ray, you
East
know.
Bay Ray, yeah.
Yeah, with Echoplex and stuff, he had kind of a signature.
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing. All these punk guys came along, so there was D. Boone. There was East Bay Ray.
Oh, also where you live. Fucking Bad Brains, one of the best.
Bad Brains? Little, again, they're a few years before I hit that scene. But the other big band for me was No Means No.
Oh, yeah. Canada.
They're one of my all-time favorite bands. In fact, when Andy quit the band, I sent him a letter saying, I will join the band. I know all the songs, and I write songs. And
he lives in Holland. He gave me a solo album, and it was really good. And he's lived there for many years now. And the Wright Brothers have kind of retired from music.
They have.
Victoria, right?
Yep.
Yeah, the big island off Vancouver people. But man, all those guys, something else. Rick Wright and John Wright. Correct, yeah.
Rob and John.
Yeah, Rob, that's it. Rob and John. Rob, the bass man. And sometimes he was Mr. Wrong. He dressed up like a priest with a leather hat.
Yeah.
I got to share the stage with him a few times. Incredible guy. Wow. And they read books. Yeah. Their first album was all about Jim Joyce and Ulysses and shit.
Yeah, what a great band.
Yeah, trippy thing. In fact, I finished Ulysses when I was in D.C. Minuteman was torn with Black Flag. So, okay, this guy who's got the inside knowledge on how to copy songs off of records, right? And he's showing you how to do this. But what about after school? Do you do the bedroom band, the basement band, the garage band?
Yeah, so I have a band called Feral Children, and there's no stylistic genre that we're not interested in, so we're playing a little bit of everything, only playing in the basement. We write about 40 songs.
Whoa.
We play a gig, and people say, do you know any songs that we know?
Wow.
And of course we didn't. We didn't know any songs.
Yeah, you were on the right track. They were on the wrong track. That's the old days of the jukebox, right? The karaoke machine, man. Man, I got a friend, a Roman piano player. He says, every band, a tribute band, you pretend you're another band. It's not even doing songs, right? It's like, you know, we're the fake Oasis. Fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, she works hard for the money. Let's put it that way. So this band obviously was for personal development. One gig. What about now? You said schooling had no use for music for you. So after graduating, do you go to higher education as far as music? No.
That's what I do. Is I go out to Los Angeles to Musicians Institute.
Oh, right? Okay, MIT.
Well, yeah, which was great. It was one straight year. But again, I was surprised at how conservative the music was. It was either jazz or it was the shredder thing that was happening in the late 80s. And I was into experimental music. We were talking about Henry Kaiser.
Yeah,
Henry Kaiser had put out a VHS cassette called Eclectic Electric.
Right.
And that was the only weird thing happening. And I remember a friend borrowed it. He said, how was it? I said, well, it's pretty good, but it's not very weird. And I let him borrow it, and he comes back the next day, and he goes, that's the weirdest music I've ever heard. What do you mean? But I thought, well, this is what I want to be doing. This is...
Yeah, but people come from different places, right?
And that's the problem.
There's this other thing, too, about technical ability versus having your own fucking voice.
Yep. And I was very much interested in both, having the technical ability to develop my voice, but not the other way. I had this voice and I knew there were certain things I wanted to do, but the techniques were unorthodox. They weren't the traditional techniques. Not that I didn't want to play fast and not that I didn't want to know 1,000 chords, but I wanted to know them in the service of something new, not a mimic.
Right, right. End up like a big scroll of player piano thing, and you're just holes are punched in you, so when run it through the machine, it'll come out correct.
That's right.
Life is too short. Life. I wrote a song with the Minutemen, right? Life is a rehearsal. It ain't a rehearsal. I was being ironic, people. Brother Sean, we're at the end of the first hour, December 9, 2021 edition. Wap Peter, so special guest, Sean Persinger. Hold tight for hour two. December 9, 2021. It's the second hour. Watch for Pedro. show, second hour, start off with No River Deserves a King. Okay, I'm going to try to pronounce it. Bodian.
Close enough.
Okay, and then this is a Sean Persinger prod, so he's more of authority on this, people. But bear me out. Live at Bang on a Can online marathon, October 8, 2020. Yuka C. Honda and her husband, Nels Klein, a good friend of Henry Kaiser. I think he did Yo Miles with Henry, if you're hip to that. Yeah, Henry went and, like, reimagined, like, the Down on the Corner, Miles Smiles kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Bootstrappers. And this is a buddy, Nels, too, and mine. Elliot Sharp. And, in fact, me and George Hurley were part of the first version of the Bootstrappers in the late 80s. Elliot's got the best fucking initials for a musician. Right? In fact, if you want to get cut to the short and curlies, right, and a brief, just call him F. Right?
E Sharp. That's right.
Yeah, okay. And then finally, that word again, Boudin, with Cotton's Sermon. There was a great finger-picking lady, I think North Carolina, named Libicott. And Bobby Dylan, I think, got
Yeah, Elizabeth Cotton, for
That's
sure.
That's it, right, yeah, Elizabeth Cotton. And Ed from Ohio wrote a song for her. I remember it for Firehose. So, okay, that year in SoCal at the MIT, it was valuable, even if you learned some stuff you didn't want to learn.
I wanted to learn everything.
I know, but I'm saying the experience was, you wouldn't call it a waste of time, right? Anytime you play, you're invested in
it. No, it was great. That was a really great experience, and it flew by, right? And I'll tell you, one of the best things at that school is, at the time, again, this was 1990, 91, that the library there, they had every guitar magazine that had ever been published. And I was the only person who ever read the magazines in that school. And I read every single magazine, and I had a list. I had this 3-page list. If it was weird, I wrote it down and I was going to find out about it. Years later, I lost that list, unfortunately. But I'll tell you, because I'll promise you that 50% of that list, people who were on that list, I'm probably, if not friends with them now, I'm acquainted, right? We're acquaintances well enough, because that was, you know how that scene is. That's a very small, you know, Elliot Sharp, you know, almost everybody else in that avant scene.
Yeah, well, in some ways, punk was about that, you know, especially 70s punk. Yeah, there was a lot of great. Fuck, when Raymond Pettibone played me John Coltrane the first time I heard it and was told it was him, I thought he was older, but I thought he was a punk rock. I didn't know he was dead. Yeah, I think it was after we saw Germs gig or something, you know. I thought it was the same kind of Yeah, you know, it's trippy about that stuff, about how turning your friends on and making scenes and you know, stuff being about people.
Yeah, yep. Okay. And about a certain attitude of playing music in a certain way. I love this line from Devo, that sometimes they're just more interested in ideas. That's you don't even have to like the finished product if you like the idea.
I think that's where the term conceptual comes from in art.
Yeah.
Right? It's an idea thing, yeah. And but which is kind of insane, because how can you really have stuff without ideas?
Well, that's true. That's
everything
true.
But sometimes fucking knee-jerk reactions were just like a bunch of automatons reacting to, yeah, I mean, there's got to be some ideas.
Some ideas are more original than others.
Ah, yeah. That's a good point. Animal Farm, yeah. A good old Napoleon and Snowball. Okay, what about teachers? Because that's right out of education. That can make a real impression on you. I mean, they can have, like, the resources, like you say, with the zines and the structure of a synopsis and all that, but you know, the idea, because I think this is missing, Sean. Maybe it's getting more and more, because, like, I took a drummer on tour who was 40 years younger than me. But the idea of older and younger people playing together, maybe not so much mentor, sensei of this thing. But
no, I think mentor is a good term. Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying it's so strict. It could be very casual.
It could be inspired
because that guy has a good technique at teaching. And like with basketball, usually the best coaches weren't the best players.
This is true.
And usually the good players, terrible coaches. I don't know why. Humans, you know what I mean? We're dualistic. We dangle our dualities.
Well, some people are more cerebral, and other people are more intuitive, and sometimes those things don't always line up. But if you can find your, I think sometimes the problem is when you think you're the artist, when it turns out you're more of the academic, and you don't realize that. One's not better than the other, But if you've deluded yourself, it can be a real problem.
Yeah, well, life is roles and we're taking turns. I think that's the most healthy thing. If you get too static and lose the dynamism, because we're, you know what I mean? We're all in the situation, right? You know. But do you have any teachers from that experience that you'd like to give credit to?
I would dare say no, sadly. That's okay. It's my biggest regret. I always tell anybody young, find a mentor. Find somebody that can tell you what they did wrong or what they did right or what you shouldn't be wasting your time on.
There was nobody at the school like that for you.
No, that school was pretty conservative. In fact, the best story I have as a teacher at school was walking on to do this. We had a class called instrumental performance. And as I walked on stage, this relatively conservative jazz teacher said, here comes Sean. Yeah, a lot of people don't like Sean at school. And there was this long pause, and I walk up, and I plug in, and he goes, that's because Sean does his own thing, and people don't like that.
Well, maybe he was rooting for you in a way.
He was. He was totally rooting for me.
He was just trying to backhand it, right?
Yeah, it was a backhanded compliment, and I walked off stage, and I went, okay, I get that. Maybe I do have to come to terms with, you're not necessarily going to be popular, right? You don't win popularity contests that way.
Vincent sold one painting.
Well, that's the problem. But, you know, I
now
grew up
his
at this
are the
time,
biggest paintings in the world. He sold one.
But I grew up at this time when I was a little delusional. I thought,
of course
I can reach a mainstream audience because I grew up listening to AC/DC.
Look, you got Mike Barnes' book on Cat Beefheart, Zoot Horn Rola. You know, I thought I joined the Magic Band. I thought I was going to be a big rock star.
That's right. That's right.
Oops.
Yeah. Well, and let me tell you, you know,
like Ray Cooter said, he got a little brown shirt. Can I play this Train Rain Zero? I love this title.
Yeah, please.
for Pedro Show, that chunk of music, Boo Doo Dune with Train Rain Zero, Emmett Kelly, Bloom's Day. I know it's 6 months early, people, but wishful thinking. Mama Leek, some Valiant Soldier, and finally, Prester John, song for Henry Threadgill to sing.
Right. Hey, I hope you realize that's a tribute to the Minutemen too, right? With political song from Michael Jackson and song
and
from
also
and
Madonna to sing, right? For Dose, I did a song like that.
And then the one for the Firehose, the singer for REM.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah,
but that was actually what it was. Michael Stipe was going to do a solo record, and he asked me to write him a song. So I wrote a song. Yeah, that was, and also the Mike Jackson one. I thought, if Mike Jackson sang this song, I would never have to fucking explain the Minutemen. So I sent it to a little demo of mine, a cassette, to his manager. I never heard back.
It's shocking. It's shocking.
Look, Boo Dune. What prodigy is this?
What's that?
What prodigy is this of yours?
What prodigy?
Yeah. Or is it a going band, or is it...
That was the band from 94 to 99, and then poof, gone.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you come back from California?
Yeah, I come back from California, and I more or less, that's the first big project I ever put together. And we were pretty successful right out of the gate. We put out a record that really released ourselves, and then we got signed to Cuneiform. We put out a record called Astronomy Made Easy, which was well received, and then we did this record, The Stolen Bicycle, and in between those two, we actually put out a live record with another label, and then poof, it was gone. So we had these four really.
What an important chapter in your music journey.
Yeah, super important. Yeah.
Look, we're at the end of the second hour, December 9, 2021. Dish What Pedro Show special guest, Sean Persinger. Hold tight for hour three. December 8, 2021. It's the third hour of the What Pedro Show. Thank you. Pedro Show. Start of third hour, Prester John, Tall Tale Pathology, then Rocket, Prime Instrumental Jive, the SOS version from Mountain Offensive, Brother Phil, Big Bear. The favorite color of light. And it's got the England spelling.
It does.
Prester John. Now, look, you're talking about some of these musicians read books. Now, where I know Prester John is from fucking Echo, Umberto Eco's Baudolino.
Yeah.
And
I learned about it from Daniel J. Borsten's The Discoverers, this phenomenal book about inventions that had nothing to do with war or conquering. And I just thought, I love this story of this practical joke that had a historical reference.
Yeah, supposedly they thought there was a whole kingdom and shit, right?
Whole kingdom, yeah, that people went looking for. It spent millions of dollars at the time, what, you know, trying to find this mythical kingdom, this Garden of Eden that was just a prank.
Yeah. Or it was like kind of blurry idea of India and they didn't know it was India,
yeah,
or some shit.
Yeah.
Right. It's, I mean, even, you know, in the Middle East and stuff, there was battles with the elephants. And, like, yeah, the European dudes didn't know elephants. You should see the drawings. You ever see the drawings of this shit? Like the
big, yeah, elephants or giraffes.
Or like big horses. Yeah, giraffes, too. Yeah, I had no fucking idea. So you get hit to this as a persona, a musical persona?
Yeah, well, I knew I was in this band with a name that was hard to spell and pronounce. And after that band, my name is a little plain. It's Sean's a little soft, right? There's no hard consonants in there. So I added the Prester John on just as a marketing tool so that I could say and I would even call venues. They go, I've never heard of Sean Persinger. And I'd say, is Prester John? And they go, oh yeah, I haven't listened to your CD right now. So
hence why you call some of these tunes Sean Persinger is Prester John.
Yes, well, the Is Prester John are solo albums,
okay.
Prester John is a duo.
Okay, yeah, but you also got one, like one alone, right?
Yeah, I got one alone, and then I have the guitar quartet, but that guitar quartet is all me.
Okay, overdubbing?
Yeah.
Okay, tell me about how you compose.
Oh, well, you know how it is. You get the one idea. I mean, it took me a long time to figure this out, but maybe not that long. As long as I had a measure of music, I knew that there was at least another 64 measures within that first measure. So I would just develop that idea over a period of time. And like we said, try to take all those different influences. After being in Boudin was this progressive rock band a la the Mahavishnu Orchestra or King Crimson.
I saw them.
Yeah, but I was also
tour. I didn't see King Crimson, but I saw Rick Laird. We just lost him. Good bass.
Yeah, we did.
You know what I was getting at is like, do you like hum into like a voice memo, or do you make demos, or do you have, just improvise it and you capture that?
No, I would basically. Since the early 90s, I was a tablet trick guy. I'm not a great sight reader, but I would just write everything down in tab. I'd get an idea and I'd write it down. And then basically since the year 2000, I've been writing everything on the computer. I play it and then I write it down on the computer and then practice.
By write it down on the computer, you mean like use it as a tape recorder?
No, I use a
Oh, you use like a Syllabus or this kind of software?
Finale is the one that I use, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I would dare say everything I've written in the last 20 years, I have sheet music for it.
Ah, good man. I mean, reading about that John Coltrane, that was really important to those guys.
Those guys were phenomenal readers, all right?
Yeah.
That was the job. That was that you didn't get a union card unless you were a reader.
Yeah, intense, right? And then you jumped out of your fucking mind. I don't know how. Somebody like Paul Chambers. Oh, man. Okay. Here's another one, I guess, that's Man Alone's, well, the other one is too, but only one iteration in the audio. Five planets visible with the naked eye.
Yes.
And you're right, right? It means wanderer, right?
Well, that's before the telescope, there were the five that you could see, right?
Yeah, well, they wandered. They weren't like stars.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, here we go. Thank you.
sit for each other in a vacuum. Occupy the time down by the beach. Sun drawn as always will forever think of her. Bright today, black, forward on, protected through the body. Shadows of silk, her innocence. Nights gather, losing creation. Sun drawn as always, will forever think of her. Ooh, sunlight he is for drawing further, living simple, single. Like he can when she left. Now they sit for each other in a vacuum. Sundrun as always will forever think of her. Right today. Thank you. suffering. Watch a fire across your road. Watch a fire across your road. All this masculine technology. Beyond simple steel erection. Well, the feminine darkness. Well, the feminine darkness. The entropy. First thing. First step. Toward understanding. But I have lost now, somehow, the sweat and the dust. Ringing days, suits without color. You're down on all fours, down on all fours, in shining steel and jealousy. Down on all fours, shining steel, jealousy. A glimpse of the sweat piles on. Tonight there are few such islands of dream. Much a fire across your hood. Much a fire across your hood.
Falling into the same pattern, blackout taking the time. Head toward midnight in a lull between rays. Shafted in timeless purgatory, none of us has the right image. And our poets retreat, leaving us in political rage. His poetry dropped away, slowly falling to the sea. Sage and time, sage and time, sage and time, sage and time, falling into the same pattern. Here toward midnight, in a love between breaks. Sheltered in timeless purgatory, none of us has the right image. Our poets retreat, leaving us in political rage. His poetry dropped away of sage and time, of sage and time, of sage and time, of sage and time. Thank you. or the advertised announcements. Coarse and salty. So many oversized, idealized artists. Distastefully thin. Sideburns and red nylon. Smooth and glossy. An empty gesture. Reinforced near misses. Trivial and overtold. All the confidence and energy. All the beauty and abundance. And in a conversation, almost no attention, carefully arranged silence. What the white clay of the crowd, what the white clay. Of the crowd, the simmering beneath, simmering beneath, the simmering beneath. Just calling the noise, calling the noise, calling. Thank you.
for Pedro Show Last Music for this edition. Five plants visible with the naked eye. And, you know, sharp Persinger is Prester John. And he's enlightened us to the fact, before the telescope, Mr. Galileo, those are the only five you could see. And, of course, the one that took the longest, right, that was Cronos, or Saturn. And if you put a washer in the middle of its Greek little symbol, it's the Blue Oyster Cult logo.
Nice.
Mr. Golic, we got thanks for that. Mike Cooper after that, live at Cave 12. Winner of 2016, part one of two, Mike Cooper. Incredible cat. Plays, what's it called? Resonator guitar with three pie tins or whatever the fuck.
Yeah,
and all through effects and stuff. Really interesting. He was on the show a couple months ago. Six Stories of an Ancient Astronaut. Whoa, some Von Doniken. Remember that guy?
Yeah.
There's some stuff.
Yeah.
Sean Persinger is Preston John. So what's going on right now? Have you made any collaborations during this situation?
Like no, the big thing I've been doing for the last year is my weird guitar lessons. I have this YouTube channel that's just ridiculously unpopular, so I know it must be good.
Memories of that teacher at MIT.
Well, right, exactly. So that's the thing that I enjoy doing the most these days is I'm interested in demonstrating weird ideas and sharing that and showing some unusual techniques and also trying to celebrate some lesser known players in those videos too. I'm like you. I'm interested in celebrating what's great and unusual and obscure because you know it doesn't matter if there's only 20 people for that audience. Yeah, those are 20 people who are hungry for it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And, you know, having a bunch of fucking rubber stamp versions of the same thing really don't help.
That's right. That's right.
It really don't help. Okay, understand
you know,
bell curves and all that shit, but come on. We got to have at least some semblance of choice, and that means dudes who dare.
People that's
who,
right.
Who, you know, let the freak flag fly, or let Bob Marsh jump away from the pole.
Well, and I got to tell you, Mike, because I don't want to run out of time and not be able to tell you this with the risk of sounding sick.
Oh, bring it.
Like, being on this show is, to me, is like, that's this measure of success. As a kid, I loved your records and thought, well, that's the sort of thing I want to do. And I got to ask you two questions. Is in History Lesson Part 2, you got that great lyric, our band is scientist rock. And to me, I thought that's what every band should be.
I didn't make that up. It comes from Richard Meltzer. The Minutemen, it was a bad state for us in a way. SST Records was in trouble because of Unicorn, all that bullshit up in Hollywood. And can we get a record out? Joe Carducci puts out the Beanspill EP on his own Thermidor label. And I send it. Richard Meltzer had sent me, you know, he wrote words for Blue Oyster Cult, huge heroes for this. But he also had a radio show called Hepcats from Hell in the 70s here. You know, they have punk people on there and stuff. Anyway, he sent me a Two of Clubs playing card. So I sent him that EP with that card back, like play the card, right?
Yeah.
He puts an article in Cream Magazine, and the first sentence is, Minutemen are scientists rock.
Nice.
See, it's about people. It goes around. And you being on the show is the same thing as me getting to send Richard Meltzer a record. Then he writes about it in Cream Magazine.
Yep.
You understand? It's not stepping stone shit. This is the fabric of this kind of culture.
It's a spiral.
So you're like you're like the next shift, you know, and Richard was the shift before and maybe Watson the shift in between. I don't know, but we're connected in a way. It's hard to explain because no one's kind of in the doing. So there's a reason why you're on this show. You know, he hit me to it, but then he got a label going, right? He had a little interest in music. He wanted to promote me. Can you see these similar minds and the spirits coming together like that?
Very much.
Okay.
Very much.
That's my guess.
So I got to ask, the other question I got to ask, because it's driven me nuts for years, is who is Bob Dylan's soldier child? Is that the narrator in A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall? Or not the narrator, but is that who the narrator is talking to? What is that lyric?
That lyric is me trying to explain what words and songs were about. I didn't know. I thought words and songs you know, Oyster Cult and Creedence and that. Yeah. I thought it was like a lead guitar. I thought words that had any kind of meaning was only Bob Dylan, who was like your weird relative at Thanksgiving muttering shit. See, Mr. Narrator, yeah, I'm trying to understand what are words in a song. D Boom with History Lesson, I'm speaking to the part one, right? Where he's being really literal about humans treating each other like assholes.
Yeah.
Well, I'm coming at it another way where I'm trying to say, well, humans can come together through expression, but how does that work? And maybe, like I just said to you about with Richard Meltzer, the knowing is in the doing. By me and D Boone making a band, being part of the movement, writing songs, you know, about, you know, as expression, not like building models, just things to look at, like it kind of looks like the original. You know what I mean? By actually using it like the pocket knife, you know? Is the art really in the pocket knife, or is it what is to be carved with the pocket knife?
Yeah,
and then,
yeah.
You know, you go to Reverb.com and shit. It's all about gear. It's all about you can find a shortcut on the truth. With the right machinery, right? Just like having the right haircut or what you were talking about, the branding or the right band name. Or
yeah.
At the end of the day, that's you're hip to that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, just started learning to write songs and then, right? I was 25 years old and kind of clumsy and shit, but that's what I was trying to do. I was trying to relate. Music is music, you know? And Bob Dylan... You know, somehow we're in the same boat with that guy.
Yeah, I love it, man. I love it. You have well, been so much to me.
Yeah, but I apologize for driving you nuts with it. I didn't mean to.
No, it's what's great, right? That ambiguity. If you laid it out that, if it was obvious, it would be worth talking about.
I'll tell you the ambiguity I put in there, that song, on purpose. It's the word fucking. I use it as both adjective and verb.
So I teach the history of rock at the University of New Haven, and that's a line every time a student goes, what does he mean by fucking corn dogs? That's what's great about it. You get to pick.
Okay, you got a website, Sean?
PrestonJohnMusic.com.
Okay, people, PrestonJohn.com. Check it out. When you get some new stuff, will you come back on the show? I could talk to you for years.
Oh, anytime, Mike. Okay. My pleasure.
And I love the idea that you're educating people with the open mind in mind. That's beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Keep on keeping on. People, December 9th, 2021, in addition to what Peter show, heave your powder dry.